Blog Talk Radio.
Wow, good evening and welcome to the first episode of Pro Wrestling Interviews for 2021. This is Dr. John Stamey, live to you from beautiful, warm Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's like a summer night outside. What a great way to start a new year. But we're going to have a super time tonight. We've got a great guest. We've got great panelists. We've got a great another guest and all kinds of good stuff. The first person I want to introduce is from Emerald Isle, North Carolina, way up there where it's probably still pretty nice like it is here. Papa Stro, how you doing?
Oh, man, sparkling apple cider, drinking some great vibing water, man. Happy to be here. Super duper neato. Cheery roo.
Well, we're glad you're here for sure. Excuse me. I'm going to die. And to introduce your host, the one and only, the amazing Velvet. How are you tonight, Velvet?
Very good, very good. Ready to get this show on the road.
Well, that's good. I'm going to let you introduce our guest. He's a really good friend of ours.
Hello?
I don't know if you heard that, Velvet, but I was busy coughing.
No.
I was going to say Velvet.
Oh, no.
Velvet?
We missed all the fun.
I know, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, Velvet, it's time for you to introduce our guest.
All right. All the way from wherever he thinks he's from. Oh, I'm sorry. From Chicago, Illinois. If you need a manager, here's the guy you need to hire, the Moretti Agency, the one and only Chaz Moretti. How are you tonight, Chaz?
Oh, I'm just fine. Happy New Year to everybody. How's everybody doing? Greetings from God's refrigerator, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, my goodness.
Stay warm, stay safe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, somehow.
Yeah, it was warm out here today. It was all of 34 degrees.
Love it. Oh, nice.
Warming up to melt the ice during the day into soup and then freeze it back up at night. Like I said, God's refrigerator.
Well, you know, it is what it is.
Oh, yeah. I got to tell you guys, I had so much fun Thursday night celebrating New Year's Eve with you all that I had to come back and do it again. So what's up for this evening?
Exactly.
Well, Dr. John, who else is on the line with us?
The whole neighborhood. We've
got Kyle, who's a buddy of Chaz's. Hey, Kyle, how you doing tonight?
Good evening. I'm doing well. Can't complain. And here's to a great new year. And we had a blast Thursday. And it was so nice that I had to come back twice. But thank you for having me.
Exactly. All right.
Well, with that being said, let's get this party started, Velvet.
All right, Chaz. You know, the golden question is, what got you hooked on this crazy business and how did you get into it?
Like everybody else, we start out as fans. I mean, I remember back, God, to 1972 as a five-year-old just running across wrestling on television. And
Wait a minute. That sounds familiar. You can't steal Malcolm's line when you were 5 years old watching big-time wrestling. You can't do that. Okay? That's sacred, buddy.
How about imitations? Can I do imitations or no?
No, I'm just picking on you, dude. Come on.
You got it.
We love you.
Go ahead.
Oh, Lord. I'll tell you what. Earliest recollection of really being into wrestling was watching superstar Billy Graham at the Garden in 1975.
Nice.
You know, I was there when he did the infamous black and white promo where he talked about Bruno and talked. It was his introduction basically to the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. And I was a big superstar Billy Graham fan because, God, not only could he do it in the ring, but he could also speak on the microphone better than just about anybody.
Yeah, he was amazing.
Absolutely.
You know, as you got to grow up as a wrestling fan, you know, it was a wonderful time. You know, set between the 70s and the mid 80s, it was just a glorious time to be a fan. You got to see a lot of the guys that were around in the late 50s and 60s transitioning out of their careers, and then other guys coming in. I mean, this was in the days when cable was just starting to become more popular in different areas, and especially up in the upper Midwest where I'm from. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was kind of funny. There were a certain set of cousins that no one liked to visit, but I didn't mind going by them because they had cable. And I used to go in another room and just watch Georgia Championship while the adults were sitting there complaining about whatever it is the adults were complaining. And so you get to see Tommy Rich, and you get to see the Road Warriors when they were first starting out, and Jake Robertson, that whatever that karate gimmick was that he was wearing back at the time, those red pants. And you know,
yes, he looked. I joke with him when I see him sometimes. Man, I said, you know, back in the day, he looked like Wich Kwon Do from Napoleon Dynamite.
Yep. Yep. And then, you know, you start to see the guys that you – I was a big wrestling magazine fan. I mean, I bought wrestling magazines like they were going out of style. And so a lot of times now you're starting to see these guys that you only read about because you didn't have the local television. And now you're starting to see them on television. And it was different, and it was interesting. And so then as they started touring more – remember when we only get the AWA up here, and then when Vince started expanding, we'd get WWF house shows, and then Crockett came out here, and we start seeing World Championship Wrestling, NWA shows. I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the first Super Clash back in 85 when I just turned 18, so it was kind of interesting to go to that show because that was a who's who of everybody, man. That was 3.5 hours of nothing but main events.
What a card that was. Wow.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you didn't realize it when you saw it. You know, the weird part was that the two unknowns on that card, the unknown match was the ladies' match. I mean, I had heard of Candy Devine, but I didn't know who Sherry Martel was at all. And to see them, you know, going backwards and looking back at what they both accomplished in their careers, and to know that I was at their first ever title match, you know, as they were contesting the AWA women's title, you know, it's something to go back and take a look at it through the mind's eye.
Absolutely, absolutely. So where'd you get your first
Chaz, Velvet, I got a quick question. Who won that women's match, Chaz? I don't remember.
Sherry Martel.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Do you have to ask?
That was her first.
Exactly. I thought that was a no-brainer.
That was her first women's title, the AWA.
Well, that's good. So where'd you get your first start? How'd you break in? You know, where was that at?
I broke in by accident. You know, I was managing in a car dealership, and one of the guys that worked for me, his nephew was a wrestler on the local indie scene, and he said, "You got to come to a show." And I said, "Yeah, sure." So I did. We went out to the show in the summertime, and you know, it was fun for what it was. It was a very small venue, so you got to see guys that were, you know, plying their trade, and you know, like anybody else, you cheer the good guys and boo the bad guys. And they had this deal where you could walk a wrestler down to the ring at their big show of the year, and so they asked me to do it, and I said okay, and didn't know who they were going to put me with. I really didn't care because I didn't know anybody there. And they wound up putting me with Melanie Cruz. And so I made an appearance that November. It was in November of 2010. I made an appearance with her. And I guess, you know, the chemistry there was so good that promoter caught me in the back as I was going back to my seat and said, you know, would you like to break in? Would you like to do this? And I said, what, wrestle? At the time, I was 43 years old and 325 pounds. I was not in the greatest of health. And I said, I'm not interested in wrestling. I said, you know, I'm 43 and grossly overweight. And he said, well, how about managing? I said, well, you may have something there. So we met and we talked, and I signed on to be a trainee. And little did I know that the trainee for managers was going to be the same thing as the trainee for wrestlers. And so that was, you know, that was actually good for me because I got myself in shape. And I've been doing it ever since. So I'm right now, I just entered November 15th. I entered my 11th year in the business, and I'm happy to say that I'm 106 pounds lighter than I was when I broke in.
Nice. Very good.
Wow.
Very good.
Great story.
Great story.
Wow. What,
yes.
What's your secret? What was your like training regimen to get to that weight?
Brother, what I did is I cut my portions way down. I cut my calories down. I made sure that I amped up protein.
Awesome.
And
you
know,
drills and ran the rope.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
And then when I was lucky enough to meet my wife, who by the way hated me when she first met me. No secret there.
That's the way it works.
Of course. No, she kept me on the straight and narrow for the last 7 years in terms of watching what I'm eating, keeping my sugar down, and that kind of stuff.
Right.
So very grateful to Amy for that.
Good.
That's
good.
Awesome.
Good. So what does 2021 look like for Chad Moretti and the Moretti Agency?
Right now, I'm a free agent. You know, after that, we've talked about it enough Thursday, but I'm just going to say after that fiasco in Florida, I am happy to be a free agent. I'm looking forward to traveling to different promotions, you know, whether it be here or abroad, and you know, expanding the roster of the agency. And basically, you know what? I left 2020 behind me. I said that I was going to make a concerted effort to leave all the BS and all the nonsense of 2020 behind me.
Either, yeah, don't look back.
Don't look
back.
Back.
I'm still not looking back.
Yeah, right.
And you never know.
Yeah.
If it's okay with Dorothy, I might manage Stroh at some point.
I'd be honored, brother. She still talks about it.
Cool.
You made an everlasting impression on Dorothy, man.
Oh, I
know.
You're like she jumped right in my arms.
Favorite manager ever. You're her favorite manager
right
ever.
Yeah.
She loves you.
She jumped right into my arms and knocked me down in the middle of the casino in Las Vegas. I love it.
Yeah, she's crazy for Chad, man. She loves Chad.
I know. She hates the Amazing Velvet as a manager. I know that.
Don't lie. You know we have a love hate relationship. We love to hate on everybody else, but we love each other.
Exactly. We know it. All right. Well, speaking of
Oscar be without Felix?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, right.
What would Granny be without Malcolm? I mean, come on.
Oh,
sorry.
Lord.
Love Granny. I love Granny.
Oh, man. I can hear the Chariots of Fire music playing.
Oh, yeah. Especially since the Raiders played the Chiefs this afternoon. God, Lord knows
to
hear that conversation.
Oh,
well, he ain't
goodness.
Paying attention to it. He's watching his TV with his headphones on and not talking to nobody. So it's actually pretty peaceful in South Carolina, to be honest with you.
There we go.
He spares the state. That's great.
So, Chaz, give us something crazy that happened along your journey as a manager, something crazy in the business. Something that was either off the wall
bunch of
or
crazy
or
things that happened.
I want to know.
God, I was managing up in Milwaukee for Dave Hero for Great Lakes Championship Wrestling. We were working his big show of the year, which was called Blizzard Brawl. And I'm managing against Hacksaw Jim Duggan, which was a very surreal experience in and of itself.
Oh, that's awesome.
Because Hacksaw did I'm in the ring with Matt Longtime, who I was managing. And Matt had been around for a number of years. And I'm... First time Hacksaw comes down and he does his usual entrance and we bail out of the ring and next thing you know he's pointing his 2x4 at me and shooting it like it's a shotgun and you know the crowd was loud enough where no one could hear us but I mean I turned to Matt and I go you know I know we're in the business but how freaking cool is this that Hacksaw just shot me with his 2x4. You know later on in the match I had an opportunity to get into Jim's ear a little bit while I had my hand on his throat. And all I hear the front row fans yelling out, that goof is hurting Hacksaw. We're going to get him after the show. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, this ought to be interesting.
Right?
Awesome. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's good. That's good time.
You know, one other time I broke in, I just started working this promotion called Global Champion, Global Professional Wrestling, and we did a promo on the babyface, and we injured his arm in the with the leg drop in the chair routine. Next thing you know, we get to the back, and there's two squad cars and an ambulance that have been called to the arena. The ambulance to check on him to make sure his arm wasn't broken, and the squad cars for wanting to know why we incited a riot. We had to fight our way to the back, and then people were basically, they were telling Amy that they were going to pretty much kill me after the show was over.
Oh,
Amy
man.
Told them to go for it because she has insurance on me.
Heat.
Lovely.
That's
appreciate
heat,
it.
Baby, that's heat.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, my
one
God.
Of the other managers, he was a very well-known manager in the Chicago area, C-Red, looked at me and goes, damn, Chaz, what are you doing on your first night? I said, get in my heat, brother.
Yeah.
That's
right.
It, man.
Oh, Papa Show.
Those are a couple of the weird things that happened. I haven't been fortunate enough to have somebody pull a gun on me yet, like Paul Lee did. But other than that, a couple of interesting little run-ins with fans.
Clown. He's so freaking funny.
who was some of the best people you've managed over the years that you felt you had the most chemistry with? I know you mentioned one, but if there was any others, please tell.
You know, I had good chemistry with Melanie Cruz. We hit it off as far as in-ring chemistry was really good.
Right.
I enjoyed working with Adam Pearce. Adam taught me a lot. In the
class
act, I managed Adam for about 6 months. And
I had
Adam
some great
taught
matches
me a
with
ton.
Adam, man. Class act, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I worked with him after his last NWA title run. He had a run at the local level up here with POW Entertainment. He was their international superstars champion. And we had a very good defense against Trevor Murdoch. And that was a very good show. So I had good chemistry with Adam, good chemistry with Melly. I had great chemistry with Soraya Knight. She and I hit it off right away.
Awesome.
And, you know, all I could do with her was just try to control her because anybody's ever seen Soraya Knight work in person, she's just wild. I mean, she'll throw the whole place up for grabs. In fact, it was kind of funny. We joke about this still. She asked me, she said, how much fun can we have tonight? I said, don't worry, I got bail money. I just got a devilish smile from her, and I knew it was going to be a fun night that night.
That's awesome.
That's great. That's great.
I just want to kind of add to
anything?
That.
Oh, go ahead.
I am really just enjoying this. I've never been a manager. I've never really studied managing. And maybe it's something I need to do with Chaz because I know it's a fascinating part of the wrestling world. So let me touch on it briefly. I'm having a good time listening.
It's
yeah, we're going to get
fun.
To Kyle in a second, but let me touch on what you're talking about, John, briefly. You know, you think of it this way. You go to Luger's or you go to Delmonico's or you go to Ruth's Chris or any big steakhouse. What's the main attraction? The steak, correct?
Yep.
All right, so the steak in and of itself can be enough for you to be satisfied in your meal, but oftentimes you put a sauce on top of it. Why?
Extra flavor, extra sizzle.
Okay.
Enhance the
so
flavor.
That's what a manager is. It's done the right way. A manager is basically an enhancement talent that is there to do two things. Number one, a manager is there to help the promotion sell tickets. In every one of my promos, I've always made sure that I've mentioned the promotion, the venue, the date, the opponent, and my client. Why? Because I want people to come out and see them. Even if they come out to see me get my butt handed to me, they're still buying a ticket to the show. And that's the primary focus of being a manager is to help sell tickets to the show. Help put everybody over, and by putting everybody over, help to show the importance of why everybody is on the card And then while I'm there, I gotta make sure my client wins. And I don't have any problem or compunction with bending the rules or going outside the rules slightly, because as Bill Laimbeer says, it's not a foul unless you get caught.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Okay, Kyle, you're up.
Certainly, and I was just going to kind of add to that and follow up with a question. Just to know that Chaz was aligned with Adam Pearce. I mean, let's all, you know, not let that go by, and I'm not saying we did, but he's a former NWA champion, especially during the time where they weren't on TV during their dark ages, and this is before Power, before Billy Corgan, and now we have Adam Pearce, who is known as Postman Pearce in WWE. And that just shows you the type of talent and, I guess, the connectivity that Chaz has. Somebody's had a vision. Chaz made the magic. And, you know, due respect to Adam Pearce, but where would he be without that extra little push, that extra little sizzle on the stake to get him to where he is today?
Well, I'm not going to take away Adam's thunder at all, though. Adam was well-established before
right.
I ever came out. But, you know, I've been blessed that promoters and bookers and matchmakers have seen enough of my talent to want to make sure that I was matched up with and able to negotiate contracts with, you know, a lot of top workers, both on the independent scene and a lot of top workers from, you know, from other than that. I mean, I had fun managing the Daivari brothers up in Milwaukee. I had an 18-month run in Milwaukee that was just phenomenal. I mean, you're talking about managing both with and against people like Matt Hardy and Al Snow, Rikishi. I mean, I managed the Daivari brothers as a tag team, and they don't really tag that much anymore. I know Aria's still with WWE. Sean's doing his thing, but they don't really tag up that much anymore. And so, like I said, I had a very good run with them. You know, I had a good run managing a couple of local teams and a lot of local talent. But I'm open to managing anybody. I mean, the one positive that came out of Florida is that I got to manage the House of Pain. And those guys are two great workers for big guys. I mean, they can move. And they're out of New York. And, you know, had we not come together and worked out a deal for me to represent them down in Florida, you know, you don't have that talent mix. And, you know, here, like them or not, say what you want about them or not, but managing at the Cauliflower Alley Club and working with the character, working with the guy like Paul Lee is interesting because, you know, deep down, he takes it as seriously as we do. And he just makes sure that his character, his persona, is done to the best of his ability. And so I had fun working with him. I had fun managing. It's weird. I had fun managing in battle royals. And you would think, you know, there's not much to do in a battle royal, but you work the other managers and you work the crowd and you make sure that you're keeping an eyeball on what your guy is doing in that battle royal. And have I gotten involved? Yeah, I got involved a little bit, as much as you possibly can. But it's all great exposure. It's all getting seen. It's all being out in front of people, because you never know who's going to look at you and what opportunities are going to come as a result of it.
Oh, by the way, this is Dr. John. I have noticed that Professor Wrestling has joined us. Hey, Professor Steve Logan, how are you doing?
Hey,
Steve, how are you?
Doing great. I did want to ask, do you ever work in Indiana a lot, or have any favorite Chicago stories you can share?
Oh yeah, I've worked Northwest Indiana for about 2 years, and you know that was a lot of fun down there because it's a different crowd. They appreciate more of that Southern style, and so I was able to manage a number of different wrestlers down there. I managed a team called Aggravated Assault, which were two big guys, both 300 plus, both could move. And, you know, it's kind of interesting because when you managing a team that big, there's not a whole lot to do but just direct traffic. So there's been some fun stuff happening. Chicago story? Where do I get started? I mean, there's a time we were my second Wrestle Rage for POW Entertainment, which was done at the Odeon, which used to hold AWA and ECW cards, and we were put in, I think we put almost 3,000 people in the stands that night, and Degeneration X was in the main event. I wasn't managing against them. I wasn't involved in that match, but I'm sitting backstage with Gorilla, and Billy Gunn and Road Dogg are already out front, and X-Pac is standing behind the curtain. He looks at me and goes, "Brother, what town are we in?" I said, "We're in Villa Park, Illinois." "Okay, great. Not a problem. Appreciate it." He goes out there, and the first words out of his mouth, "Hello, Chicago."
Oh.
So I had a laugh.
Is that like a Juventud Guerrero moment?
Oh, yeah. I had a laugh. Brother, what town are we in?
Don't you?
Villa Park. Okay, I got it.
Or a truth moment, man. R-Truth always said he was in the wrong town everywhere.
My bad.
Right. My bad.
Oh yeah. You know, we got
love truth,
I worked
man.
The match I worked a couple of different times against Chavo Guerrero. One time Chavo decided to take matters in his own hands and get even with me for interfering in his match. And needless to say, yeah, I got kicked where I didn't want to be kicked, so that was kind of painful.
Yeah. I love Chavo, man. That was great, dude.
Yeah.
You know, I got to manage against Jordan Grace when she was 17. I'll tell you guys an interesting story about that. I was her ride to and from the show, and it was during that one winter was where they called it Snowmageddon. I mean, we got snow up until May.
Snowmageddon.
So this was a March show, and we're driving to the show, and it's not snowing yet, but there's snow all over the place.
Right.
We got done with her match, and we usually stay till the end of the show. I told the promoter, "Look, we got to get her down to her transportation down in Chicago because we were about 40 miles north of Chicago for the show." And I said, "It's already snowing." Wow. They canceled her bus, which was, you know, out of the blue. So I wound up getting her on Amtrak. We wound up sitting in the train station. And sitting her in Union Station all night. Had got dinner and for the snow. Got her over to Union Station. She waited for the train to come up in the morning. Gave me a call and said she was out. But, I mean, it's like, you know, you're in the middle of a snow blizzard. Everything is shutting down. And thank God she got on that train because otherwise it was 3 days before transportation was up and running again. So it was just the weird things you do to make the fans happy.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I got another question.
Sure, Steve.
Was there ever a talent that could speak very well, but you just worked well with them like a Heenan and a Bockwinkel?
Pierce didn't need me. Pierce could speak eloquently. Pierce could speak just about as eloquently as Bockwinkel in his promos. He didn't need me, but we got along good. And I helped enhance his character, and he taught me a lot. So, yeah, Adam Pierce was definitely one of those guys that, you know, Adam Pierce would have been Adam Pierce with or without Chaz Moretti.
Yeah, sometimes I'll follow his Q&A's posts. It's interesting that he's still available to his fans, even though he's in WWE.
Well, you know, Adam never forgot where he came from. He broke in Chicago, in the Chicago area, in the Milwaukee area, working for Carmine DiSpirito back in the mid-90s. And then, you know, he went up to Steel Domain and got further trained up there and got his opportunity to challenge for and win the NWA title. And, you know, his career took off from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's neat
seeing
the official on the
wall. Yeah, I mean, one night we were working, and next thing you know, Ricardo Rodriguez is backstage because he was, at the time, he was dating one of the girls that I was managing. He was dating Taylor Mays, so I got good critiques from him. Armando Estrada took me under his wing when he didn't have to, when I was a two-year
rookie.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I was a 2-year rookie. I just started working up in Milwaukee for Hero, and Estrada took me under his wing. And I mean, he basically taught me positioning and taught me the theory and the psychology of being a manager. So, I mean, I learned a lot from him. I attended a seminar with Jim Cornette.
Oh, man.
You know? And I don't ever talk about the – I don't ever lessen the importance of the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion, because it's a learning opportunity. Yeah, we're there to socialize and have a good time, but a lot of the guys, a lot of the older guys that are there are not afraid to teach you if you're willing to ask to learn. I mean, we were standing in the drink line one night, and Ted DiBiase was standing ahead of me in the drink line, and I tapped him on the shoulder, introduced myself, and told him that I admired his work and that I was, you know, in the business. And right away, next thing I know, Ted DiBiase is teaching me the art of the entrance. And he basically said, kid, let me tell you something. And he says, no matter where you're at, if you're in front of 12 people or 12,000 people, the minute you walk through the ring, the minute you walk through the curtain and you walk to that ring, you got to walk there like you own the joint. You got to command that crowd. And so these are all little, you know, little things that you learn in the business if you're smart enough to commit them to memory and actually put them into use.
Correct.
This might be
well said.
This might be better for the go home. But do you have any? Can you share any memory of working with Paul Bearer?
You know what? I was lucky enough to work with Paul Bearer the last show that he did, the last indie show he did, which was 11 days before he died. I was on the undercard of that show. And he managed Buddy Roberts Jr. because he had a good relationship with Buddy Roberts, you know, back in Texas with World Class. And so he managed Buddy Jr. And we sat and talked a little bit afterwards backstage. We really didn't start talking about wrestling. We just started talking about, you know, areas to live. And he was down in Pensacola, and we started talking about that. And next thing you know, he looks at me and he just said, never, ever, ever betray your character. He says, so when you're out there, you're in your persona. When you're backstage, you lose your persona. But when you're in front of the crowd, they pay to see your persona. They didn't pay to see the guy behind it. And so that was one of the things that I always take away from my conversation with Percy Pringle.
See, that's a good thing that young kids should know today. That was a teaching moment right there.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it came out of nowhere. We were talking about the weather in Florida and what it was like to live in Florida. And all of a sudden it turned around to him offering up this information to be a better worker and a better in-ring performer.
You know, everybody's all, you know, some of these people about reality and all of this stuff. But, you know, that's what some people understand. I mean, the personas are what sells, not TMZ, you know what I'm saying? It's like they want to see more characters. They want to see personas with charisma, you know, stand out and entertain. You know what I mean? That's what it's all about.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly, Stro. I mean, you look at it this way. No one's going to pay to see Mike Mizanin, but they'll pay to see The Miz. Now, are the two interlinked? Sure they are. Every persona is a derivation of your individual personality or part of your personality that you want to let out that you don't normally let out in your normal life. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, same thing with anybody. I mean, Dwayne Johnson grew up in the business. Dwayne Johnson might have been a decent worker as Dwayne Johnson or whatever incarnations he started out with. But the minute they came up with the persona of The Rock and he was allowed to bring his inner personality out, that's when he became iconic.
Right. I mean, gosh, I mean, you know, behind the scenes, and maybe like if he hadn't even been Giants fans, maybe he'd dig me. But I mean, that would be kind of quite boring, you know.
Yes, no, definitely. I mean, here I'm going to go on record.
Right.
I'm not a fan of the reality era of wrestling.
Right.
I think this whole let's imitate video games and let's use our real names and let's make this more realistic is stupid. If you want reality grappling, go watch the UFC. If you
want
to suspend your
disbelief, you want to escape from reality, not like live more reality. You know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. If you want to escape reality and suspend your disbelief while watching great athletes, that's what professional wrestling's about. At least it should be about that.
I was going to say, do you think that maybe something got lost when people say reality, that they want more reality? What they're actually saying or trying to say in a poorly written, poor manner is that they want more sophistication. They don't want to feel insulted. They want to, as you said, suspend their disbelief to watch something.
Absolutely.
To an extent, Kyle, absolutely. But here, let me ask you a question. When Ringling Brothers was still running, okay, you went to the circus. Did you care how the magician did his tricks? Or did you just watch the show for what it was?
Did watch the show, but I was intrigued to figure out how he did something because it looked really cool. I was curious. Maybe I'm just the 1%er.
Exactly, but the magician didn't give you a Q&A afterwards and tell you exactly how it happened.
True.
I mean, that's the part that's been lost in professional wrestling. You know, the funny part is they always want to say that CM Punk was the guy that brought in the reality era. He may have talked about bringing it more into reality based, but he never got out of character.
Exactly.
So who's
just
working who?
Exactly.
That's right.
I want to make a comment to what you guys have said. Not only do you want to go see their persona, but when you are in persona, you are better than your normal self. All right, I know Rob Kellum very well. He's a pretty spectacular guy, Chamber of Commerce ambassador. He's incredible. But when I see that man get out there as Stro with Dorothy and that stroller, he is somebody else. He has jumped up a notch. Papa Stro, you have jumped up a notch. When you are Papa Stro out there, you have jumped up a notch. And it's like, have y'all ever met a girl named Patty Seymour? Just say yes or no. Have you ever met Patty Seymour?
No, I've not.
So, no. Okay. You all have. Because that is Princess Leilani Kai, who was unbelievable as the princess. But as Patty Seymour, she was just dumpy old Patty Seymour. You know, I was talking with Susan Green about that last night. She said, you know, we were just who we were, but when we got out there, we were somebody else. And I think the persona makes you a greater character. Does someone want to comment? I'll shut up now. But
here's the thing with that, too. It's even though we're emphasizing and portraying like something different than our norm, right? At the same token, we put ourselves into it because what you see, what your character persona that you see is an extension of ourselves. It's exemplified, if you will.
Well, I'm true.
And that's the greatest gimmicks and characters in the history of the world are those that are an extension of oneself. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree totally. You know, I was having this conversation I was talking with Carmine DeSpirito this afternoon, and this conversation came up about, you know, wrestling back in the day and how there were the characters and the gimmicks and the personas. I said, but, you know, you realize, let's take a match that happened 1,000 times back in the 80s, Wahoo McDaniel versus Cowboy Ron Bass. And, you know, they would come to the entrance and Wahoo in his headdress and his belt. sometimes carrying a tomahawk, sometimes not. Ron Bass decked out in his leather chap and his leather vest and big Resistol hat, and they'd make their entrances, and you knew what their characters were. But the minute they took their entrance gear off and the bell rang, it was wrestling. It was just an extension of who they were.
Absolutely.
And you know what else? Another thing is, to expand on what Papa Stroh said, nobody wants to see a half-assed Chad Moretti, Velvet, Papa Stroh. They want to see that character be above and beyond. So it takes a life of its own, you know, when you're out there. And yes, it is an extension of yourself. But, you know, we know how to turn it on and off. A lot of people cannot do that. A lot of people can't differentiate with that. So that's another teaching moment, I think, that, you know, if you're going to be in your character in the locker room all the time, and you go out, and then everybody in the back has already seen what you were going to do on the show.
I've heard to follow up on that. I've heard stories about Al Snow and Kevin Sullivan being a character all the time in public, like Al eating with Ted, you know, when he was eating out, Kevin Sullivan wearing his cape all the time when he was working out. Does that still be prevalent?
Oh, that's something we're taught from the old school, man, years ago. We were taught that.
Yeah.
To live your gimmick, to live your character. You know what I mean?
Right.
Ric Flair, a perfect example, man. I mean, he lives, breathes, eats, sleeps Ric Flair 24/7. He's done it for years. He's still doing it. I mean, it's an old school adage from way back, man. You live it when you're around public. When you're around public, you live your gimmick, you live your character 24/7. And you know, there are times like Velvet said, though, you can tone it down and turn up the volume, if you will. And
exactly.
An individual in the business that has that power to bring it up and down like that, man, he's a true performer, brother.
So just going along with that, you guys remember Nick Bockwinkel, and I know we've met Bockwinkel. I know you know Bockwinkel longer than I do, but just meeting Nick at the CAC, Nick Bockwinkel was Nick Bockwinkel. You see that same persona all the time when Nick was around, but during a show he would just turn it up another two notches, and that's
right.
What made Nick legendary.
Right.
Hey Chaz, this is Dr.
You know,
John. We've got a friend of yours on the line, I believe, from area code 203. And I think they just dropped off. I'll let you know when they get back, okay?
Sorry about that.
Hi, friends.
Oh. Now, I'm also curious.
That sounds like my friends.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. They skipped you again, brother. They called in and hung up.
At least they didn't ask for money this
second time, actually. Right.
Oh, damn.
Huh? Hey, I got another question.
Somebody called and then dropped off.
That's not good.
Yeah,
say,
you know what's kind of funny too, though, guys. We're talking about this turning it on and off. I make a joke about it because when I'm in a locker room or when I'm away from the ring or away from the fans, I'll take my sunglasses off because that's just a way of toning down the persona, you know, so that you're not looking unprofessional in the locker room. But if somebody says, hey, Chaz, can I get a picture? Yeah, let me get my personality, which means let me put my sunglasses back on.
Right.
Go right back into mode, if you will. So, I mean, it's
exactly.
I understand that idea.
Hey, Papa Stroh.
Yes, sir.
Anyone take the car? Papa Stroh, I guess I'm screwed if my character's a part of my personality, huh?
Well, so that makes you who you are. That's why you're so unique.
Okay,
and I think everyone in the business.
Thank you, honey.
Yes, everybody should be unique in their own way in pro wrestling. I mean, variety is the spice of life. It's just pro wrestling. You know what I mean? You got to have a variety for our audience.
Velvet, don't ever be ashamed of it. I mean, look at Adrian Street. That man
no,
would go
listen,
in and out of airports in
one
character.
One of the toughest ever, Adrian Street is.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I talked to him at the Gulf Coast reunion some years back, and I'm going to tell you what. That man was so funny. He's like, well, it's a fabulous character. You must do it correctly.
But you know,
he's great.
When you
Linda out of Florida.
When you met him, he was still in gimmick. He was still wearing spandex and those 6-inch high boots.
He wore his red spandex, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I mean, you know. Now, would I wear a sequins jacket in my normal life? No, absolutely not.
It's like a Diane Come Sheik cussing out a lady, gave him a Hulk Hogan photo, right? Then at the end, he says, "Oh, thank you very much, man. Appreciate it."
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
You know what I mean?
Gosh.
And then besides, I always have the Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder to bring me back down to reality. Her name's Amy. I get a little too over the top, and she'll look at me and go, "You're an idiot." Okay, good. I'm done.
Hold on, Chaz. Hey, who's from area code 203 with us tonight? Hello to area code 203. Who's this?
Here we go. Good evening, gentlemen. It's an honor to be on your show, Papa Stro, Chaz Moretti, Dr. John. It's calling from the East Coast. It's the Guardian of Chaos. Big
oh,
Daddy.
It's Big Daddy. Oh, brother,
hey,
how are
brother,
you?
How you doing, man? Awesome. Good to have you on the show.
Well, I just want to say I've been listening to you guys for quite some time now. I heard you guys on New Year's Eve. Stro, you put on a hell of a show. Chaz, I guess you had a little bit of the bubble. You guys were highly entertaining on New Year's Eve. I had a great time.
I knocked down a bottle with Chandon in about 4 hours. Yeah, it was fun.
Jeez,
well, of course, I knocked over. Now, my wife, who doesn't drink at all, I knocked over her grape juice, which was. yeah, I knocked over her grape juice. I was not very popular New Year's Eve with her.
Uh-oh. Well, I just want to say that to say this, gentlemen. I appreciate
always
you taking my phone call. I have a couple of things, Chaz, listening to you and seeing that we're both managers in the business, although I am retired now, and I was a big fan of Stro back to the WCW days. I love the character, and I love the gimmick, Stro. I'm a big fan of all your work on social media. So
thank you so much
for taking my call, and I have a couple of questions for Chaz.
Sure, shoot, brother.
Chaz, are you familiar, because I've been out to your area many times, but it was about 20, 25 years ago that I had a very good run with the World Wrestling Zone and Steve and Larry Gligorovic. Are you familiar
with
Gligorovic?
I know the twins very well.
Well, it's a small world, Chaz. They brought me out there in 98, 99, 2000, 2001. We also ended up working with the now defunct AWA superstars and Johnny Stewart and that crumb Dale Gagne.
Everybody has a Dale Gagne story.
I remember that guy.
And I also worked with a couple of guys, Chaz, from Great Lakes Wrestling. As a matter of fact, when I was out there for Jerry Springer making an appearance as the Big Daddy character, some of the guys from your area, local wrestlers, I was on there with the Iron Sheik, I was on there with the Pitbulls. So we have a lot in common, and I'm very impressed with your career, Chaz, and some of the guys.
Thank you. I appreciate
that you've been with.
I'll give you a little story about the twins. Larry and Steve and I went to high school together.
Get out of here.
No, we've all attended St. Ignatius College Prep together. Their father was the bursar. He was the head of all the money. He was in charge of all the money for the school.
Chaz,
and
so Chicago, we ended up going to Hammond, Indiana, and we worked at the Civic Center down there for a couple of different shows. I had a chance to work with a guy by the name of Tommy Capone. We went against Terry Funk that night. And I also was the manager for the debut of Josh Matthews, of all people, Chaz.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's awesome, dude.
So go ahead with your story. And to hang out with Hangman Page, I'm very impressed, Chaz. You got quite the resume for a guy who's, you know, listen, I've been around since 1983. I'm a lot older than I care to admit. But Chaz, an impressive resume in your near decade career, my friend.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Like I said, I've been fortunate enough to have good promoters behind me that, you know, that recognized what I could bring to the table and, you know, and take a chance on having me work with talent. And I've had, you know, I've had good talent that have reached out to me. I mean, I didn't do anything special other than be a professional behind the scenes and, you know, do my job to the best of my ability and make the people hate me because, you know, the crescendo of booze was music to my ears. It let me know I was doing my job right.
Could I tell you who you remind me of, Chaz? You,
please.
I had a chance to work with them. You remind me of a combination. And listen, let's not get crazy. All the fans out there to listen to Stro, because I know Stro and Dr. John have a huge fan base. You remind me of a combination between, and you're going to laugh, Chaz, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, Jim Cornette and Gary Hart.
You know, it's funny you say that because when people ask me where I based my persona off of, and they said, "Well, you're just copying Ric Flair," I said, "No, I'm actually copying seven different people. Flair had a part of it, as did Cornette. Gary Hart was a huge influence on me. I loved his work, especially with the great Kabuki and the great Muda. I thought he was a genius." You know, and one of the other parts of my persona that no one understands is, as far as command of the ring area, command of the entrance, I studied Freddie Mercury a lot because Freddie Mercury could command a stadium as large as Wembley with just making a sound, turning his head. I mean, that was just phenomenal work.
I got to follow up on that.
Stage presence.
Nakamura is a huge Freddie Mercury fan as well, and Michael Jackson. So that's what I thought of when you just mentioned Mercury.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to Live Aid. You go back and watch Live Aid, and Freddie Mercury brought 150,000 people to their feet.
Freddie Mercury, as someone who's an artist, can understand about Freddie Mercury and his history, and there's no one better to study as far as a character and getting
Absolutely.
Yourself over.
One of the greatest
and
ever,
Stro,
man.
I know you can
Freddie
identify
Mercury.
With that,
mm-hmm.
being, you know, such an artist. Really, again, Stro, where can I catch some of your work coming up? And then I have another comment that I want to ask. I want to say to Chaz.
Okay, well, I got some stuff coming up in the works. I haven't confirmed yet as far as wrestling in. So once I get that confirmed, I'll let you know. I got plenty of conventions that I'll be listing soon coming up that I'm getting solidified at the very moment. So I'll let you know for that. And podcast-wise, every Thursday night, WCW Retro on VSNation.com, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm in the room every Tuesday night at 9 with Brady, Kathy, Matthew and Derek, and of course my sci-fi show I have every Friday night on my Facebook page, facebook.com/StroTheMaestro, called The Stro Zone. Every Friday night at midnight, I show old school horror sci-fi flicks with Dorothy and the gang. So yeah, check them out when you get time, man.
Stro, you're as busy as a blow-up doll at a frat party.
Man, it's been a crazy life, brother. It's a crazy life.
Well, I appreciate it. And again, I'll certainly keep following you. And the nation has an
Thank
incredible
you.
Lineup of podcasters. And Chaz, just to get back to Heaven and Hell and the Twins, I mean, we did some unbelievable shows out there. And it's a hotbed of wrestling out there in the Midwest. I also had a chance to meet through Steve and Larry, who was one of the ring announcers at the time, and obviously we're still in touch, is Justin Roberts. Have you ever had a chance to
yes.
meet or work with Justin? Oh,
wow. No, Justin and I unfortunately never crossed paths. I mean, he had gone on to the WWE and bigger and better things by the time that I got involved in the business, and so we haven't had a chance to cross paths, but big admirer of his work. In fact, I mean, I worked the last World Wrestling Zone show that they did at Portage Park. I mean, they put 800 people in a tennis court outdoors, and it was a great night. In fact, it was the first night that I ever had the opportunity to work with micro wrestlers, and I managed Pod against his son for the micro championship. And, you know, I gained a great appreciation for what they do because those guys work their asses off in there.
Absolutely. And I don't want to take up too much time on your guys' show. And again, Stro, I'm a big fan. Dr. John, Chaz, I'm honored to be on your show. Follow me on YouTube and on Twitter and on all social media. If you get a chance, I would be humbled and honored. At Big Daddy GOC. And the GOC stands for the Guardian of Chaos. Chaz, it was good to see you on pay-per-view. I know it didn't go the way you wanted to, but to see you on pay-per-view with my boys, Nick Payne and Hakim Ali, their house, their rules. I will say this, no matter what people say about that event, it was a debacle, but Chaz, you and the HOP were one of the strong parts on that pay-per-view. I will say that.
So I appreciate that. I mean, I mean that from the heart. Thank you so much. And, you know, basic, and I've been a big fan of yours, you know, since we started conversing and communicating on Twitter and whatnot. And, you know, your Chaos Corner shows on YouTube are, I don't miss them. And so I highly recommend them to anybody. Yeah, it's, by the way, there's one of your fans that's going to do it. She does a run-in every podcast. There's one of your fans that's going to do a run-in, Big Daddy. Hold the phone.
Dude, your podcast, your videos, they're awesome. I like those.
Oh, thank you so much. I consider that an honor. I'm humbled and blessed. The Guardian of Chaos character's a little off the top. Like I said, you know, I consider myself, I've been around since 1983. So, you know, I'm an old dog. I'm having a lot of fun. I like Stro and Chaz and all the people in the business. We have a love and a passion and a dedication. And like Dr. John, it's about giving back and being a carpenter in this business. And it's about fun. And once the fun stops, that's when you know it's time to get out of the business. And I'm sure Stro, who's been at the pinnacle in this business, understands what I'm talking about.
Amen, brother.
Well, again,
no two ways about it, bro.
Please stay in touch with me on social media. I'm going to continue to follow you guys. Again, I'm a big fan. I don't care what people think. I'm a mark, and I'm proud of it. Guys, I'll continue to listen, and I'll be here every week. I appreciate it.
We all are, dude.
Everybody, we'll see you.
That's amazing.
All right.
We got another
care.
Caller on the line. We have somebody who strikes fear into everybody he steps in the ring with. I believe we have Sinister on the line.
Hey, what's happening, everybody?
Oh, Sinister!
Hey, how are you, brother?
Brother.
You
all right?
Now,
oh, yeah.
Chaz,
oh, yeah.
This is the guy you need to manage.
Oh, I'd be more than happy to. I know Sinister's work very well. I'd be proud and honored to represent him. Especially if we're going up against somebody that you're representing, make sure your little pipsqueak butt doesn't
worry.
Get involved.
Yeah, don't worry about all that. Hey, Sinister can hold his own without you, but I'm going to tell you something. Papa Stro, you know this, because you're on the other side of the fence against us too, but I'm going to tell you something, Chaz. Look here. This is South Carolina. This ain't the wind. This ain't Chicago. This ain't the Midwest. This is the Carolinas, buddy.
Here we go with the Carolinas. I'll tell you what. I got a stipulation for the match. Loser cleans the bathroom. You in?
Okay. I'm in.
No, because
either way
I get stuck doing it.
Exactly, Chaz. Don't take that.
Oh, Lord. Did you hear
her?
Either way, she's going to get stuck doing it.
Yeah. So, Sinister, what's happening, brother?
Nothing much, man. Just trying to stay on top of everything and always trying to get the show when you guys are on. It's a great show, and, you know, I'm always, you know, I'm a worker, but at the same time, I'm just a big fan of the sport. And I'm just,
right,
you know, glad
right.
to be part of you guys' effort, you know.
Well, we love having you, and we're going to continue with old Chad Moretti here. And I'd like to get something other than that happened in Florida. Not that. But I want to know something else that kind of that burnt you up. in this business. Got to be. I mean, we all have them. We've had plenty. I know I have. What? Give us something else. You don't have to say any names or nothing. But what has gotten you to go, really? Did that just happen?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly one of the things that was like that. We're working in Indiana. Now, Steve, you're going to appreciate this. We're working in Indiana, and it was like my second show down there. And I found out that Nacho Barrera was in the crowd. Now, Nacho Barrera was a carpenter of all carpenters. From 1970 until about 1988, 89, Nacho worked the AWA, and he wrestled everybody. There was a one top star that came through there that Nacho didn't wrestle. So I had found out that he was at the show, and I told the promoter, I said, oh, I got to meet him. I'm a huge fan. I got to meet Nacho. So they brought him backstage, and we were able to chat for a few minutes. He's a great guy. And a couple of the kids were standing around, and they were kind of snickering. And I waited for Nacho to leave, and I went up to him, and I said, what the hell are you two laughing at? That old Mark, you had to meet him? I said, that old Mark worked everybody from Nick Bockwinkel to Hulk Hogan. What have you done? Oh, I said, why aren't you asking that man for advice? Why aren't you learning from a guy that's been around with everybody? They couldn't say anything. And these were two kids that were, what were they, 5 foot two, about 112 pounds apiece? A good stiff wind can knock them over.
Nice.
And you know, the saddest part of it is I had to manage those two Nimrods that night.
Oh. So what I'm
Lord knows I didn't put them over.
Good. I want to propose something for 2021 in Battleground Championship Wrestling. Chaz Moretti. If Papa Stroh and Sinister want to get with you and have you represent them, Diverse Effect would have nothing but the utmost pleasure of whipping their tails in the middle of the ring, and I'll get 5 minutes with you in the ring if my guys win.
And given the fact that we're so old, what are we going to do in that 5 minutes? Basically rock, paper, scissors?
You can thumb wrestle.
You go ahead.
You can get
you
on all fours and thumb wrestle in the middle of the ring.
That's right.
I'll tell you what, Velvet.
Anytime
you want me to represent Sinister and Stroh at Battleground Championship, just give me the date, give me the location, and I'll be there.
There you go. Papa Stroh, does that sound like a good idea?
It sounds good.
I'm just happy being booked, man.
I know the feeling.
I don't know why you're saying that. You the champ.
I'll even give you the friends and family rate.
Oh, that's too funny.
Well, Chaz, you are representing the Battleground Championship World Heavyweight Champion.
And he's going to stay that way under my tutelage.
Oh, no, he won't.
Oh, yeah, he will.
Better watch out.
Nah.
Oh, heck, we might have a match John right now with Velvet and Chaz.
Dr. John?
I'm announcing, yeah. Man. I've got to make sure everyone knows who's happening.
Well, now, I'll tell you what. The only person that I would actually fear in South Carolina is Susan Green. She's rough.
Yes. She'll be there.
Yep, I'm screwed.
I got a couple more questions.
All right.
No, Velvet, you'll probably have Susan in this corner.
I love it.
That would be funny. That would be funny.
Go ahead, Steve.
What's the craziest bump or like worst offense you've taken in while you're managing?
Oh, God, the craziest bump that I've taken while I was managing was actually the easiest bump I ever took. We're working a match in Joliet, and I was working with a very, very talented wrestler, Robert Eagle Anthony, otherwise known as Eagle Fantastico. He's been around the indie scene forever. And he got me up and gave me a Death Valley driver. And I got to tell you, it was the weirdest sensation ever. It looked sick on film, but he took such good care of me that I didn't even feel it.
That's neat. And then follow up, I wanted to ask, because I know you mentioned them before on another show, it may have been Retro. How come, even though Grand Wizard is in the WWE Hall of Fame, how come Grand Wizard isn't talked about enough in that top five?
You know what? I think he's so underrated, it's criminal. I mean, I talk about Ernie Roth all the time. I mean, his work with superstar Billy Graham, his work with the original Sheik when he had the Abdullah Farouk persona was just so good. I mean, I think basically, you know, it's a lot of people just not taking the time to go back and look at the stuff that happened prior to 1995. I mean, you know, a lot of these kids nowadays, they were babies and they were, you know, little ones when the Attitude Era was around, and that's all they knew. You know, they haven't been exposed to the stuff that happened in the 80s and the 70s and whatnot. And even before that, I mean, you know, Stroh's great uncle was a big influence on me. I used to love watching Gorgeous George. I don't forget, he had passed on before I was born, but watching the films of him at the Marigold Arcade and working for Fred Kohler, I mean, it's integral if you're going to be a student of this game.
And also managers right now is a lost art, and I'm glad you're still doing it. I'm glad there's other people still doing it, because there's not enough. You got a few, but there's not enough on TV, put it that way. True.
I agree.
The business. So
I agree. But then again, take a look at what's going on now. Stroh, you'll appreciate this. Look at what MVP is doing right now. It is awesome managerial work.
MVP doesn't get enough credit, man, for what he's done this year.
Does not.
Man, with the whole Hurt Business and everything.
I mean, he took three wrestlers in and of their own right, but couldn't speak worth a damn, couldn't really get a persona over and creating the Hurt Business. I mean, you're right. I mean, MVP is probably, if they gave out the old Manager of the Year awards, he should be the winner.
Oh, absolutely.
And look at his work in Impact, too, with Bobby Lashley back then, the Beatdown Clan. I was really enjoying that faction as well. So, I mean, he's shown his managerial skills are on a high level.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I'm really glad about in terms of talking about old school and older managers that are still with us, thank God the COVID didn't take Bobby Davis, because Bobby Davis is still with us. He doesn't give very many interviews anymore, but I had a chance to speak with him on a couple of occasions, and my God, the work that he did with Nature Boy Buddy Rogers was just legendary.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
You know, I wish the CAC would reach out to him and do something for him, because I think Bobby deserves it.
Bobby who?
Agreed.
What's Bobby's
You know,
last
getting
name?
Back to that fiasco in Florida.
Davis.
The second in command, the lackey, was supposed to be some sort of manager with ECW, and he says, "Hey, Chez, who's the manager of champions?" And without skipping a beat, Bobby Davis. Yeah, that shrunk his personality a little bit. Oh, well.
Now, I was curious. I don't know if we touched upon it yet. Where and when in wrestling or wrestling today was the art of the manager lost, and will we be able to get that back somehow or see that again?
I'll tell you where it was lost. It was lost in the Attitude Era, and it was lost because of two gentlemen that didn't try to kill it on their own, but their personalities and their personas were so good that they became the benchmark for wrestlers, and that was Stone Cold and The Rock. Those two guys could cut such a great promo that now they're teaching the kids that are training to cut their own promos. And when you got workers and wrestlers that cut their own promos that are legitimate and believable, you don't really need a manager. However, on the flip side of that, there are still a number of them where that part of their game, that part of their skill set is grossly lacking. And so now this is why you're starting to see a little bit more of a rise of managers back in the business.
I think Paul Heyman's the benchmark right now, like the top tier.
One thing about Heyman, Steve, I feel Heyman's cheating the fans right now. He's kind of mailing it in. I mean, Heyman's right now, Heyman is performing at one-tenth of what he used to do as Paulie Dangerously.
I really don't think that has to do with him per se, but I think that has to do with a lot of other backstage politics BS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree, but, you know, we were all fortunate enough to – I was fortunate enough to be a teenager in the last golden age of wrestling, and, I mean, I got to see Paulie Dangerously. I mean, he was an animal at ringside. He was definitely fighting it out with Cornette for top two managers in the business at the time. You know, now you're seeing it's like you said – for whatever reason, whoever is responsible for it, he's watered down. Is he still Paulie Dangerously? Yeah, he is in a little bit more modified form. You can still see that dangerous alliance come out of him, but it's just not what it was back when he was really plying his trade.
I did have another question. Was there a favorite manager that you like to feud with?
You mean like fantasy if I had to pick anybody?
No, I mean like someone that you actually feuded with that you were across the ring with. Like, was there ever a manager versus manager moment?
Oh, yeah. There's a manager right now that I had the fortune of working a match against at the last CAC. And that's the MK Bandit, Matt Robles, out of Utah. You know, Matt right now is the number one manager on the independent circuit. I'm not afraid to say it.
And my favorite.
You know, Matt's phenomenal. And the funny part about it was we didn't have to physically involve in order to get our rivalry over. And, you know, that was kind of the magic of it. But, yeah, Matt was definitely one of my favorites to manage against. As far as fantasy, I would have loved to manage against Sherry Martel.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you talk about, you know, working against somebody that can just plain flat out work all the way around. Yeah, Sherry Martel was it.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
Yeah.
Is this somebody who you would want to have managed you know, do a company to ringside, I guess, in a dream team or dream faction scenario?
You know, I'll tell you what, if I had to pick out somebody to want to manage in a dream scenario, I would have loved to work with the great Muda, because Muda's in-ring was so good. And as an homage to one of my idols, to Gary Hart, I would have loved to manage Muda at least once.
Both of which I think are highly underrated in conversations and among fans today, both Gary Hart and Muda.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to see Muda bring out the best in somebody, check out his 1993 match in Japan with Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Muda brought the best out of Hogan that night.
Yeah. That was the first and last time you ever saw Hogan actually wrestle.
I got to see Hogan in the AWA when he first came up. Hogan could work. So he worked in the AWA. Vern let him go.
Well, because that's the training. But the problem is, when you're working 5 nights a week, you get 2 days off. They were getting Wednesday and Thursday off during the middle of the week, and you wrestle Friday, Saturday, Sunday live on Monday, Well, Friday you were live, Monday you were live, and then Wednesday, Thursday, you either got, if you were close enough to go home, you went home or not. But you were doing house shows, so they had to cut him down. They had to cut Hogan down. They didn't need him get, nobody wanted him to get hurt. You know, that's why his moves then went to four,
You know, I think it's another thing, though, that you touch on a good.
Do a lot. Go ahead.
You touch on a great point, though, because I think nowadays these kids are, they're getting injured doing all this stupidity that they do. And I think they're seeing it the wrong way. I don't think they're realizing that they're cutting their career short. I think they're seeing it as like a badge of honor. Oh, I got injured. No, you got injured because you're stupid.
Exactly. Hmm. Oh, they called a spot that shouldn't have been called, period.
Yeah,
so,
I mean Stro, you could touch on this. I mean, back when you were working WCW, getting dropped on your head was never something that you would actually be proud of, correct?
Oh, my God. If I did half of the stuff, some of the stuff I've seen, man, I mean, the Andersons, Ivan, Nelson, all the old-timers would, like, still kick my ass.
Right.
Right.
Oh, Jesus. Unbelievable.
But you see some of these indie kids, and in their promos, they're going, yeah, I can't wait to perform on this show, and I'm going to drop somebody on their head. Oh, what are you, a moron?
Oh,
yeah.
That's
the trick, you know. That's why you know, it's good to learn from the veterans of the business, because I mean, longevity is everything. You want to have your career go as long
longevity,
as it'll take.
You make right. Get, longevity, you make money. You stay in the
yes.
business.
And if you don't make money,
flip flop around. Right. You can't make money when you broke every bone in your body. You know?
That's the name of the game, make money. Scott Hall said it best. He said, you can make friends, you can make money. Well, I got friends, so let's make some money.
Right?
I agree.
You know what?
I mean,
right.
Joe Lamont,
yeah,
too, said it best, too. He said, if you're not in this business to make money, what the hell are you doing here?
Right.
Well, I
want to
be the jackass that has the greatest. I want to be the jackass that has the greatest flip over the top rope, and the guy doesn't catch me, and I broke my back, and I never get to wrestle again. So yeah, that was great, wasn't it?
I mean, it's great to have your style, but if you're not making money, what's the point? You know what I'm saying?
I agree. I mean, here we'll go back to this little fiasco down in Florida. They had their rumble for their heavyweight championship, which in and of itself was fine. The guys that were in the match worked their asses off, but there was one guy that did a top rope dive. He did a plancha in a battle royal, and they forgot to catch him, and he landed on his head, knocked himself out. They had to bring a stretcher to ringside. Now, that didn't get put on the pay-per-view, but they had to bring a stretcher to ringside to cart his dumb ass out of the arena. Yeah, they left him laying at ringside for at least 5 minutes before, while they were calling an ambulance. They didn't even have an ambulance on staff. So, I mean, you know, it's
stupid.
That's why,
kid, it's always wise to know what to do at the right time.
Agreed, brother. That could have gone much worse. And I
hope absolutely, it could have. I mean, you know, we've worked those battle royals at the CAC, and there's 40 guys in the ring, and 37 of them know what they're doing, and the three that don't, they get tossed out real quick.
Yes.
You know, I was just looking back at the last one. I mean, I think the final five at the last one was Dom Vitale, Trevor Blanchard, Paul Lee, Stroh, and Sam Houston. And Gabe Gallo was out there as well, top six. I mean, so those were – every one of you guys knew what to do in a battle royal, and it certainly wasn't a freaking plancha off the top outside the ring.
Oh, come on. That's great in the battle royal. What are you talking about?
You know, which effectively eliminates you. Stupid.
Oh. I wanted to add to the discussion.
Yeah. Add away, brother.
Mitsuhara Misawa passed away, you know, shortly, you know, during a match or after a match. And it was just a backdrop. I wonder, like, if that King's Road style or getting dumped on your head contributed to it, years of wear and tear.
Oh, well,
you only got one
style
spinal
there,
cord,
brother. I mean, it's you got to go 110, if not none at all. I mean, that's just the way they've done it for years.
Right.
Doing that style.
And I love
yeah,
that
yeah.
style.
I mean, that's their style. It's happened since the days of Inoki. I mean, you know, it's just been Japanese style. You know that it's going to be a little stiffer, and it's going to be a little bit more physical. That's what the Japanese fans like. But, I mean, you know, you look at matches back in All Japan in the 80s, and you had Dr. Death, and you had Terry Gordy, and you had Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody, and they were stiff as hell, but they weren't killing each other.
Right. And it still brings people back, too, nowadays, looking back at it, like the Bruiser Brody and Abdullah feud, as an example. Stiff, but it worked, and you couldn't doubt the credibility of that. And to add on to that, I think it's sad and unfortunate, in my opinion, like in America most in particular, wrestling has lost its identity, namely AEW, as an example, with who they sign and how they orchestrate and structure a match where they call it, you know, spot monkeys. And I could probably go ad nauseum, but just to wrap it up in a bow, a bunch of high spots, in my opinion, just doesn't make a match. It has its place for a moment, but it should not be the epitome of a match.
You know, AEW is in a position where they could either kill themselves or they could be the greatest wrestling company in the business right now. It's just a matter of how they want to approach the talent that they have. I mean, they've got the opportunity with guys like Tully Blanchard there and Arn Anderson and Jake and a lot of these guys that could help direct that company to heights. Or they can kill themselves by overemphasizing spots. I mean, I just think they're in a unique position. They can either make it or break it, but they only have themselves to blame.
Well, yeah, because a lot of those guys aren't listening to the veterans. I mean, so therefore, I think the latter. I think they'll end up having to dump talent to get better talent that understands the game, because it's going to come to that point. Because they've hired all their friends, their family, and their lovers. They're booked on the show now, but yet, okay, how many matches on the Brody Lee tribute actually was a wrestling match? Okay, I probably named two out of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think
if you go back a week prior, I would say zero.
Yeah.
So the problem is, you're right, Chad. The problem is they're at a make-or-break situation right now for themselves. And they're going to have to make a decision. It's going to be a hard decision, because what do? Do you keep going the way you're going? But here's the thing. If you're not letting Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson and Jake Snake and some others that are there that are veterans help write that show, then what are you doing? Because go to the quote that Jim Ross said. Why do I want to believe that you tossed everybody out of the ring? Now you're going to run and do a dive, and good guys and bad guys are going to be hugging themselves together to catch your stupid ass. I don't believe it.
I agree.
So,
knowing my luck, if I try to go face, everybody move out of the way. It's not hit the concrete.
Right. But,
oh, no.
Well, you
thanks,
know what,
guys.
Right, but you know what
AEW,
I mean. AEW
all elite,
it's,
brother.
But, well, I mean,
know,
here,
and,
look at it,
had
look
five
at it
guys
this way.
On the ground catching one dude.
Here, look
right.
at it this way, though, Velvet. Right now, AEW's top talent is Friedman. And I'll tell you why.
Oh,
he's not the best physical
absolutely.
Worker that they
yeah.
have.
Love that
but
dude.
Friedman
okay.
is the next coming of Nick Bockwinkel. He gets
well,
it.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. You got to put in Hangman Adam Page in that group, because ever since he got out of the tag team with Kenny Omega, he's a superstar
mm-hmm.
that they're not utilizing in the correct way.
Oh, man. Young, hungry, solid, man. I dig Adam Page, man.
Right. He's 25 years old. He's got everything ahead of him, and yet they're putting him in dumb scenarios. Let him
well, I mean, here's,
be the single
here's another problem that I
be.
See with AEW. Cody made a very near-fatal comment one time when they asked him about heels and baby faces, or good guys and bad guys. And he
right.
said, well, you know, I don't really see that existing in our business anymore. What the hell are you talking about? It's how our business was based. It was based in the carnivals, good versus evil.
It's based on the controversy.
That's basically what this week was.
You have to have controversy. If you don't have controversy, nobody's going to come to the show.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Like Bishop,
you're going to have
controversy create cash.
Yep. Or you're going to have what Al Snow calls two guys in tights. No one wants to say to see two guys in tights.
He's
pretty
a genius.
Much.
Al Snow's
yeah,
a genius,
is.
Man.
But that's the whole thing. People like him and everybody who's there and people who are not there, that's who they should be getting to write the shows. Let's slow this train down a minute. Let's reorganize this train. Let's get some people on board, and let's get some people off the train and get in some other people on the train. That's what they need
yeah.
to do. They really need to sit down and look at their roster and say, okay, mm-hmm. when COVID is over, we're going to have two shows, and we're going to hit the road. We're going to have Dynamite, and we're going to have Dark. Put your development, like everybody else, put your developmental talent on Dark and have some people come in and get exposure and see if they can handle it. And if not, let them go. Keep your stars on Dynamite and put them
I
in
agree.
The right scenario. But also, you look at what Jim Crockett did. Jim Crockett was the king of teasing on his television show. Every now and again, he'd have a top-tier match of a Ricky Steamboat and Flair or a Wahoo and Superstar and Blackjack Mulligan and whoever. But he was the teaser. Man, he would get you on your seat because he would do so little that it would drive you absolutely insane and you couldn't wait for the next show. Or if they were coming to your town, you were going to the event. Nobody's doing
that. Let's even take that one step further. Even before
exactly.
Crockett tried to copy Vince McMahon and failed at it, and that ultimately led to his demise, when the NWA was a true territorial system, the world champion, the world tag team champions were controlled by the office in St. Louis. And so they, you know, you had Bob Geigel and Sam Muchnick pretty much laying out what the storylines were acceptable and not acceptable for the world champions. But then you had guys in the territories that knew that art of the tease and the swerve and how to book. You had Eddie Graham, you had Sam Muchnick, you had Paul Bosch, Fritz Von Erich. These guys all knew what the hell they were doing. You know, we don't have that now. We don't have the affiliation between the larger organizations and the smaller territories or independents, if you will. And I think that's a part that's missing because, you know what, you've got all these guys that are trying out for the E and trying out for AEW, and they're trying to imitate what they see on television, but they've not been brought up properly because the local promoters aren't given the opportunity to really develop the talent. The minute they develop somebody, the guy is gone. He's got a tryout.
But I also blame the big companies for pulling those talents. And not only that, you know, some of them get strung along for years and never really get anything out of it. You know,
they tell them
they're going to give them $1 million and make them a star, and it really doesn't happen. And it doesn't happen that way.
I mean,
okay?
Stroke could attest to this. Stroke.
Yeah, but if you're hungry enough, you'll bust
mm-hmm.
your butt to learn more to get to the right spot.
But Stroh, back in WCW, how many guys were brought in and were kept on contract and were paid monthly and didn't work, didn't make television? I mean, what did that do for the company? It didn't do anything for the company.
Oh, man, quite a bit of us, man. Oh, my God. I mean, there was times where all I knew to do was to go to the gym. Because I wanted to work so bad, but I was on an exclusive contract, so you know, it was like, come on. And then finally, when I got the call to do some shows and events, I was so happy. Oh my God, I couldn't wait.
Right. But you know, back before that though, when you had Smoky Mountain and you still had a little bit of the territory system, you know, you're able to work 4 or 5 nights a week. And if it didn't work out in one territory or your angle ran its course, you just moved on to the next territory and did it again.
Oh, true freedom, man. That's true freedom right there. And it's just, I think the guys and gals of the business, if they have that freedom to go wherever they want, they should cherish it for as long as they can. They really should.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, because it'll be one thing to get up to the top. Yeah.
Can I ask another question?
Dutch Mantel said it best. You're part of the furniture if you're there too long.
Yeah, I wanted to ask that. Was there any traveling buddies that you kind of learned from? Like, any good car ride stories?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my trainer, Jimmy Blaze, was part of a tag team at the time called Psychotic Rage with his partner, Mitch Blake. And, you know, those guys had 20-plus years experience when I broke. Well, actually, over 20 years experience apiece when I broke in. And we were able to, you know, travel the shows with them and listen for the psychology and listen to what's happened to them and what they saw as right and wrong. And I mean, if you kept your big mouth shut and your ears open, you learned a lot on those car rides.
Yeah, I've heard
all
that.
Right.
Where you talk business a lot or car rides. I figured I wanted to get that in before you all wrap up.
That's how a lot of us learn the business, is being on the road. It's like learning
exactly.
On the job, you know what I mean?
I mean, We had the Midwest Wrestling Union a couple of years ago. We didn't have a dispatcher because of COVID, but you know, we had it 2 years ago, and I was able to sit in the car and talk to Carmine DeSpirito for a while. And Carmine's a wealth of knowledge in terms of how to book shows and how to book characters and how to put gimmicks over. And since Carmine never stops talking, all you can really do is listen.
That's good.
That's awesome. I tell you what, everybody, I've got bad news. Time's up for pro wrestling.
Okay, wait, Barrett.
But we'll be back next week. Velvet,
hey, thank
you'll be back with us next week to host this thing.
Hey, don't call me. I got to get up at 5:30 in the morning to take my daughter to school, so don't y'all call me.
I'll call you about 10, okay? I've got
here
my
we
call
go.
Roster is booked between now and 10. Chaz Moretti, thank
okay.
you so much. It's always a pleasure talking
yes,
to you. You're such a good friend of ours. Papa Stro.
Well,
thank you.
Papa Stro, the
thank
one
you.
And only. We couldn't do it without you. Hey, Kyle, thanks for being with us, and always feel free to join us.
Certainly.
I see your number, so I'll make sure you get added. And, of course,
all right, I appreciate
sir,
it.
Don't be a stranger either.
Happy to help and support the show and also support Chaz, too. So thank you all.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad to
Greg
have everybody.
Yeah,
and the British lady,
right.
as we
call
say in the mountains,
week.
Done said it's time to go.
Absolutely.
So we'll see everybody next weekend, next Sunday night,
Greg,
10
I'll call
p.m.
you tomorrow.
On the most exciting wrestling show. I'm going to say it's one of the two most exciting wrestling shows because I think WCW Retro is a pretty great show, Papa.
Retro.
I'll tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
You there? We love
absolutely.
WCW Retro.
Yes, we do.
Stamped.
Thank you so much.
Stamped in the door.
Next week
right,
will be another bar burner, so please join us.
Okay, good, and we'll see it. And is that the topic on your show, Papa Strode, next Thursday?
Just be looking out for social media for the topic. I'll be happy putting it up soon, so.
Okay, good. All right. And we'll see everybody next week. Be sure to – we're all on Facebook. Amazing Velvet, Papa Stro, I'm on there. Everybody's on there. Professor Wrestling's on there, so just get in touch with us. Tell us, you know, send us some love. Take care, and we'll see everybody next week on Pro Wrestling Interviews. Cheers.
Goodbye.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
You too.
Good night.
All right. Bye.